Did you do anything fun Saturday night?
Well, all the guys from my barbershop quartet are dead, so... No, not really.
Coming up on the drop zone, Cap.
You know, if you ask Kristen out from statistics, she'd probably say yes.
That's why I don't ask.
Too shy or too scared?
Too busy!
Was he wearing a parachute?
No.
No, he wasn't.
Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm managing editor Matt Goldberg, and with me today is associate editor Adam Chitwood.
Hello.
And JoeBlow.com editor-in-chief Paul Shirey.
Hey, how's it going?
Today we'll be talking about Captain America, The Winter Soldier. We'll be looking at that film. Paul will be going sort of into depth about the character's history. He's a bit of a Captain America expert, and I'm glad that he could join us for this. And then we will also do sort of a state of the Marvelverse, as we tend to do every time a new Marvel movie comes out. And then, as always, we'll finish up with our recommendations. And I would like to apologize in advance to any listeners if I am sniffling or sneezing. It's pollen season in Atlanta, and I want to burn every tree to the ground. And I don't think that's unreasonable. So going to Captain America: The Winter Soldier, I loved it. It's very neck and neck for my favorite Marvel movie. I'm giving the slight edge to the first Captain America: The First Avenger, but to the point where it's almost meaningless to be like, it's splitting hairs, really. So I really like the film a lot. My review's on the site. So I wanted to sort of open up the floor to Adam and Paul. Paul, since you've been good enough to join us, what were your thoughts on Captain America: The Winter Soldier?
You know, I had very high expectations being such a huge fan of the character to begin with. I was a fan, you know, of when he first emerged in the comics. So I kind of built up this, following with the character. I was very, very excited. And really, my mind was kind of blown that they were going to go with that for the sequel. So my anticipation was, you know, through the roof. And having seen it, I can honestly say that my expectations were very highly exceeded. I thought it would be cool based on everybody's reviews, which constantly pissed me off because everybody was seeing it before me and everybody was saying how great it was. So you can imagine that just kind of drives you crazy a bit. But I was blown away. And I know everybody's kind of saying that now, so it's almost kind of like getting like broken record, like, yeah, you love Captain America too. Who didn't? But for someone that's a huge fan of the character, it's just, they nailed it. And that was just really great to see. And another notch in the belt for Marvel in terms of adapting a character exceptionally, minus that whole Mandarin thing.
You don't like the Mandarin twist, is it?
I don't. It's not that I don't like it. It's just that when you talk about the integrity of adapting a character, that's definitely a far left field adaptation. out of the box.
But for sure, Adam, what were your thoughts on Captain America?
Oh man, I'm gonna be the Debbie Downer. I could not disagree more.
Sweet, no, we're into conversation now. Yes, I'm excited. Talk to us.
I was not a fan. It was fine. I feel about it the same way I feel about Thor 2, was that it was fine. There were some parts that were really stupid, and I saw it yesterday, and I'm already forgetting most of it.
Wow.
Just nothing stuck out. I thought the one-liners were terrible. Like, Thor 2 was at least funny. Like, it felt like someone was trying to do Joss Whedon's job on this movie, but they failed miserably. Like, can we get into spoilers? Are we going to do a spoiler?
Yeah, we're going to talk. Yeah, let's go into it, people. If you haven't seen Captain America: The Winter Soldier, see it, come back, listen to the podcast. Go.
Okay, the beginning of the movie was fine. It's fine. My review is that it's fine. My problem is that it's always, we're saving the end of the world. And by the time we get to the point where Nick Fury is alive, surprise, which, I mean, who thought? That another issue is that them bringing Coulson back for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when Nick Fury died in the movie, I was like, well, obviously he's not dead. He'll come back at the end of this movie, or he'll come back in another movie. He's not dead, because Marvel's already bringing characters back, so that's done. I mean, I know that Samuel L. Jackson signed a 9-picture contract, so I know he's coming back. So the stakes of that didn't feel as impactful for me. And then towards the end of the movie, I guess right at the beginning of the third act, where Nick Fury is alive and they sit down and they come up with their plan, that when Cobie Smulders' character explains what they have to do to kind of take down these big helicarrier carriers, I was like, all right, I know exactly what I'm going to be watching for the next 35, 40 minutes. And that's exactly what happened. And there was just, I mean, you know, big CG craziness. And a lot of it felt like, okay, so the beginning is like a political thriller. And it's very grounded and realistic, which I liked and I enjoyed. But then they take that realism and they just throw it out the window for when Cap can just, you know, like jump off a building and be totally fine. Or, you know, a building falls on Crossbones and he's totally cool, or a helicarrier like crashes into him and he's totally fine. Like it's don't worry about it. He's totally cool. But I guess my biggest issue was just that it's, we're saving the world again. And it just felt, you know, I've seen that so many times. I mean, say what you will about Iron Man 3, but I really enjoyed that it was a simple story about, you know, Robert Downey Jr. was alone trying to fix his suit. And the Wolverine has its problems, but I really liked that was a self-contained, personal story for him. And I liked the Winter Soldier stuff, but there didn't feel like there was enough of it. Like, they spent most of the movie where he's just this masked menace, and then they kind of gloss over the fact that he's Bucky. Like, it's not a big enough deal because they're also trying to juggle the Robert Redford character, who feels very just kind of like a bland villain. Like, he's, you know, they cast Robert Redford in a Marvel movie. Obviously he's going to be the bad guy, and he just didn't really bring anything extra or special. That character didn't feel any more nefarious than the Winter Soldier, and I felt like both were underserved. So there was no really clear, no villain that I was really, you know, that impacted the story for me, that I felt was kind of, you know, like, oh, this is real bad news, guys. I mean, I liked some of the action. I think Chris Evans is great. I think he's a great actor. He's perfect for that role. You know, Scarlett Johansson was great. It wasn't a terrible movie, but I just thought it was fine. Nothing blew it. It didn't blow anything out of the water for me. Felt kind of forgettable. I'm just so tired of every movie being, we have to save the world. And I know that that's the problem inherent with a superhero, because if you do smaller stories, then, you know, it's something that's just easily fixable by a superhero. But it just feels like I've seen this so many times.
Okay. I have my retort, but Paul, what are your thoughts? Because you had high expectations. And
Well, I think, again, you have to look at from my perspective, too, is I am a comic nerd, plain and simple. And as a kid, like, reading all these comics, I never, you know, the movies that they tried to make as comic book movies back then, which isn't that long ago, but as a kid, that wasn't the genre. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was pipe dreams to think that there would be millions of dollars thrown into a comic book movie and have it made right. So for me, like, now this is like the golden era for me in terms of movies. And with Captain America, with Winter Soldier, again, you're adapting this kind of seminal work for Captain America, definitely his best comic story in the last 20 years or more. So seeing that on screen was pretty great. And they didn't adapt it, you know, line by line. There's a lot of liberties taken there. But I felt they captured the essence of it. And what I really liked in response to Adam's comments is, the even though there's, you know, CGI stuff, there's always going to be CGI stuff. What I liked is that the fights in this were exceptionally grounded. I felt like I was in that moment. I didn't feel like, oh, that's so fake. Like, I saw a lot of that in the Avengers when they were fighting. You can tell, it's like, well, that's a CGI guy. It looks good, but it's, you can still say, oh, that's a CGI guy. That's,
they feel
fighting.
Like bouncy balls or something.
Yeah. Right. And with this one, I mean, it felt like they were really beating the crap out of each other. I was like, wow, there's so many moments. And that's what I really like, too, is there's so many, like, holy shit moments where you're like, oh, my God, that was awesome. Like, just, you know, whether it be just like a kick or a punch or something like that. And for me, that was one of my primary gripes of the first Avenger, which I really enjoy. I think it's a great pulpy 40s kind of action movie. But it's a little light on the action front. And I really wanted to see more of Captain America just kind of kicking ass and really realizing the full extent of the super soldier serum, which, you know, like with Adam said, you know, he jumps out the window and he falls all the way down. That was great to me because it shows, you know, that's right, he's Captain America. Like, he's not impervious, but he's a hell of a lot more elevated in his, you know, he is a superhero. He has superpowers, although he's not invincible. But that is certainly well within the realms of him, you know, surviving and actually doing, and pretty much does week to week in the comics, or month to month, rather.
Yeah, see, I haven't read the comic, so I was just basing it off of the first Avenger and the Avengers. And I saw that they threaded that needle at the beginning of Winter Soldier, because I feel like they anticipated that being a problem when he jumps off the plane and they're like, does he have a parachute? And he's like, no, he's fine. And they showed that he can do that. But I guess since it was nighttime, I didn't think it was that high. It just kind of felt like towards the third act of the movie, a lot of the kind of even Falcon falling and stuff, it just kind of felt like a little cartoony, and I was pleasantly surprised with the fist fights that the Russos choreographed and the highway car chase sequence, which I thought was excellent with the Winter Soldier. And I guess my biggest gripe is that I think the Winter Soldier storyline is really interesting and really cool, and I wish that had been the main focus. I think by involving Hydra and involving all this extra, you know, conspiracy stuff, it got a little convoluted, which I'm fine with it in theory, but in watching the movie and as someone who hasn't read the comics, it just felt like they were juggling too many like villainous balls, and I would have really liked to see more villain balls.
Doesn't get better, Adam.
But I would have liked to have seen a story of Cap and the Winter Soldier, just them two, because that would have been, first of all, more relationship focused. Because at the beginning of this movie, I mean, they're talking about how Cap is alone in the world. He doesn't have anyone that's had the same life experience as him, and this is his opportunity. Like, his friend is back, but his friend is not his friend. And I feel like that was such a more interesting route. But, you know, it's a Marvel movie, so it has to have these big set pieces, and so they kind of got into all of that stuff. I guess my favorite part of the movie though was the Falcon Cap relationship. I thought that was excellent, and
yeah,
I want to see more
well
of that.
Done. And I like that too, as in terms of between Cap and Falcon. What I really liked was, again, and I am a veteran too, so like having that relation between those two guys was very real. It felt like, okay, yeah, that's totally legit. Like, you have Sam Wilson working for the VA, he's doing counseling, you know, and that is a perfectly believable situation in which Cap and Falcon would bond, you know, over that shared perspective. And I think that's great that they played on that rather than, oh yeah, hey, here's this guy, he's just like this hotshot experimental pilot dude and he's really cool. But they took it to the next level and actually had them form that bond based on their shared combat experiences. And, you know, for not only as a fan of the comics and the characters, but also as a veteran, I thought that was a really cool nod that they tossed in there. And it heightened the relationship, I think.
So Adam, just going back to your point about like sort of the saving the world thing, you know, it's funny for me is it almost has become perfunctory, and in a sense it's like, okay, yes, you have to save the world. So what does saving the world mean in this new context? Now, I will admit, and I said in my review, I think Hydra's plan is kind of silly. Like, I don't understand, like, we're going to take out Tony Stark by taking out 20 million people, and, like, that'll cover it up. And I had a friend who's like, no, this is Hydra's coming out party. I'm like, yeah, but, like, it's not. Like, it's just, I understand, like, Hydra thinks they have it all together, but already, like, the whole film is about how, like, three people can take down these helicarriers, and I understand, like, oh, once they become operational, they're invincible. Like, it's just one of those things where you just kind of, and I hate saying this, like, you go with it, because I feel like the exchange is the notion of what the film is trying to do in terms of its commentary about its paranoid thriller about government power. Now, you put that into, you know, I don't think anyone's afraid that, like, you know, Washington's launching helicarriers next week, but there is the notion that, oh, you know, we're just, it's for your safety and like the things that you're willing to accept. And like, I thought that was interesting. And it's even, you know, in terms of, oh, we sent out the Winter Soldier to change history. And it's like, that's very disturbingly American. Like when you go into, like, you know, for instance, Iran, it's like, oh, we don't like this guy because he's not giving us oil, by God, you know, and then give it to us. Sort of that notion of changing history to make it suit your ends. And the thing I like the most about it, about the film, is, you know, I mean, I like the humor. I thought the action was...
I literally rolled my eyes at the end where he wakes up in the hospital bed and says, on your left. I was like, oh my God.
That to me wasn't a joke, though. That was like a nice comforting.
To
me, that wasn't.
It felt so cheesy. I guess it's in keeping with the comic books. I don't know.
See, to me,
I thought War 2 was really funny. The Iron Man films have been really funny. The Avengers, even the first Captain America was funny. But
you know, I mean, I thought this was fine too. I thought the on your left thing was like a charming way to do it. I liked the Ezekiel like joke on the headstone. I had like good witticisms. I thought it was just, I liked the Cap Black Widow banter. I thought Anthony Mackie was great. I think it's a funny film without going full humor. Like, I think Thor, in its second half, really goes full on with the comedy, and it almost feels like compensation. And I think it's great, but it's also part of why that film is unbalanced. I think
not as compelling.
What?
Because the rest of the movie's not as compelling. And with your headstone thing, I laughed at that, but it took me out of the movie. I feel like I guess my problem with the Winter Soldier is that it's too cutesy, too kind of wink-winky, and that goes back to the cameos. Like, as much as I enjoyed seeing Danny Pudi in the movie, it took me out of the movie. Like, it felt very kind of wink-wink, cutesy, like, we're making a comic book movie, and we love comic book movies, and we're so excited.
See, I disagree, and I think, to
me,
it's like,
what... I never got the cutesy thing at all. Right.
Well, I think the thing for me is, what I was going to say is, the thing I think maybe that the film works so well for me is because I think it is the way it displays the character. And I guess the character can be taken as cutesy, but I feel like the film is so good-hearted because Cap is good-hearted. And I think the film could have gone an easier route in terms of, like, oh, the world is dark and twisted and corrupted, and, like, you know, Cap's, you know, going to have to go to that place. But he doesn't. The world has to change to Captain America. And that's, to me, the reason I like the film so much is, like, he's a good guy. And it took some real restraint from me to not rag on Man of Steel in my Captain America review, because this is, like, this is the hero I want. This is the leader, the guy who is actually leading by example and says, you guys have to make tough decisions. You know, I believe in, when he goes into S.H.I.E.L.D. and says, some of you are dirty and some aren't, but I believe in the good people, and I believe you guys are going to do the right thing. There is that just good-hearted humanity of the character, and I think it just spreads across the entire film. And I think that, you know, it makes the other parts more compelling. I honestly, it's not, to me, it's like, I wasn't surprised that Samuel Jackson lives. I wasn't surprised that, you know, Robert Redford's the bad guy, because I've seen political thrillers before. It's not even like, oh, this film is obvious. The genre itself makes these things known. And so, to me, it wasn't even a matter of twists and turns. The film also is like the Winter Soldier reveal. If you're a comics fan, that's not a reveal either. If you're not, you're going to have the great reaction that the lady at my screening had when he takes off the mask and she goes, oh, that's his friend. That was amazing. So there to me, it's like, I guess,
well, I'm not saying,
Adam, it's not like I'm saying, oh, your points are invalid. It's not that at all. I totally see where you're coming from. For me, the jokes worked. For me, the action worked. I especially liked the practical stuff. And I like just where the action goes. I like how the action is done, not only in terms of its execution, but also in the fact that I think the action has subtext. Like, Nick Fury gets attacked by, you know, cops, SWAT teams, basically. You know, it's foreboding, you know, enemies hiding in plain sight under the guise of people that do good. Yeah. Or
I thought
the elevator
was excellent until the third act, where it became where you've got to go big, because, you know, that's what Marvel movies do. And it just felt kind of, you know, Falcon's flying, but I'm really watching an animated movie. Like, it didn't feel as fun or as exciting as maybe it was in, you know, the Avengers, where Iron Man's catching Hulk or something like that. And I don't know. I just, a lot of, and I wasn't looking for twists and turns. You know, I wasn't like, oh, I want you to surprise me with Nick Fury coming back or anything like that. It just felt, I don't know. I felt, I just wasn't crazy about it. I'm not the biggest Captain America fan as the character, but I think Chris Evans is perfect for that. I thought his charisma was good. And I did admire the fact that the Russos took some small moments in the beginning of the movie. I was pleasantly surprised by that, because you could see another director just kind of breezing by a bunch of that small character stuff. Like, even when Cap goes to visit Falcon at the VA, where he works at the Veterans Affairs, I thought that was a scene that, you know, I feel like a lot of other directors or studios would have just snipped that out, you know, get to the action. And I appreciated that. And I could have seen, I wanted a little bit more of that before it got straight into the thriller stuff. I did think it was, you know, pretty compelling with the thriller stuff in the beginning. And again, I thought the practical fight sequences were excellent. But once it hits that middle mark, I guess once you get to the AI Toby Jones, which I thought was a little too ridiculous for this movie. It's like, did they have AI technology in the 70s? We're going to have, like, Toby Jones as a talking computer here. Is that from the comics?
That perfectly fits in with the comics, because that's what he becomes. Okay. And he's actually a huge part of the comics with Winter Soldier coming back. So, I mean, he's like actually a major villain, and in the comics, he's actually his the screen is his chest. Like, he has an actual body. He has like this little tiny robot head, which is, I mean, it's a comic. And the screen is on his chest, and it's like that's how he talks and that's how he operates and everything. So, I mean, it's that was more like a nod to the comics, and it actually showed the potential of, hey, we could actually, because he's a major player, he's definitely one of Cap's main rogues, and he could easily come back. I mean, there's, you know, infinite ways to bring him back and actually make him a full-blown villain.
Yeah, Devin on Badass, he speculated that apparently on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. there's this character called the Clairvoyant.
Yep.
And that you, in that if, you know, Arnim Zola can upload his consciousness to the internet, well, shit, you know, what can't he do? It's sort of, it would be an interesting way to keep the character alive. I like the data bank stuff. And to me, that also was one of the good jokes when, like, the War Games reference. I thought that was funny.
I liked that joke. So it was hit and miss for me, but most of them felt like misses. It felt like Joss Whedon was there, but it wasn't. Like, Joss Whedon was about to do a pass on the script, or like maybe started and then just like got too busy with Avengers, because you could certainly feel Whedon's influence on Thor the Dark World. A lot of that Loki,
well, that's because that film needed some saving. That's the reason.
Yes.
That's true.
No, seriously, like, in editing room, like, that film was struggling. Alan Taylor was struggling. He was coming in as, like, a closer. That was the thing.
And I guess thinking back, the last 3 Marvel movies we had have been Whedon's Avengers, Shane Black's Iron Man 3, and then Whedon-esque Thor the Dark World. So it's a lot of really smart quirks, quips, dialogue. So I guess this is the first one that hasn't really had that feel for me, and I was a little thrown off by it.
Yeah, I like that there wasn't as much. I mean, honestly, I didn't feel like there was a lot of, there was less jokes in this than there were in any of the other ones. And I liked that it felt more grounded for me personally. The Russos completely like blew me away in terms of what they delivered. I did not anticipate that they would be able to deliver this kind of movie. And something where you're watching the fight scenes and you're like, you know, your jaw's dropping. The scene where the grenade hits Cap's shield and he flies off the overpass and smashes into the bus. I mean, it's like, holy, these guys are messing around. And I thought that was just, I mean, it was inspired. I was like, man, these guys set the tone in terms of action for Whedon, who did a great job in Avengers. But again, there was a lot of parts in Avengers where you're like, that's obvious CGI with these guys fighting, you know? And I hope that, you know, Whedon looks at that and he's like, yeah, all right, Russos, no problem. I'm not going to use CGI for these next sequences. Don't worry about it.
Well, here's the thing that I like. In terms of the action, I like the subtlety of when it opens, where he's beating up the guys on the ship, and when he hits them, they go flying, which makes total sense, because he's much stronger than they are.
Yep.
Whereas in the first film, it's like he's beating up Hydra. It's like in the first movie, they just hadn't thought about it. They're like, oh, he's a guy, and he hits people.
Yep.
Which was fine. Like, I wasn't thinking about it either, because I enjoy that movie so much. But it was just this little detail that I thought really paid off for more action scenes. I thought they used the shield in more fun ways in this
Absolutely.
One, which was nice.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I like the action a lot. For me, the whole film pretty much worked except the villain's plot, which I was just sort of like a shrugging, like, okay, you know, it's almost, you know, what the best thing to come out of that, like, their plan is that they get to mention Stephen Strange. Like, that's the only thing. Although, another thing, when I saw it a second time, and again, talking with friends about it, is that it'd be interesting if chronologically this film comes before Iron Man 3, because it would explain why Iron Man can't call S.H.I.E.L.D. for help, which is one of the things that kind of bothers me about Iron Man 3. It's like, Iron Man 3 is just, it's a weird film because it's the first one in the post-Avengers world, and you're just kind of wondering, like, this is a big deal, Tony, and you have an organization that would come help you. They would come to you.
I think that's the problem that they're going to have for every movie going out. I mean, I felt that a little bit in Thor the Dark World, and a little bit here too. You could make the argument that he can't contact anyone because S.H.I.E.L.D.'s compromised, but if he really needed to, he could find a way to get to Tony Stark. Because that's a big deal. If S.H.I.E.L.D. is compromised, that's something you want to let Tony and all these other people know about.
Well,
but it's something you just have to let it go.
You have to either let it go or wait it out. Like, that's the thing.
Sure, if they're going to try and fix it.
Well, and in the
fix
comics,
it or
too, Iron
build
Man
upon
plays,
it.
In the comics, Iron Man plays actually a really large role in the whole Winter Soldier storyline. So it's interesting that he's not there, but obviously he couldn't be. You know, just like pony up all that cash to have Robert Downey Jr. in Winter Soldier, not going to happen. But yeah, he plays a very large role in all of that. So
see, I think dismantling S.H.I.E.L.D. solves more problem than it causes.
Absolutely.
Like, because this, again, now we don't have to worry about, you know, where's S.H.I.E.L.D. going to show up. And of course, Guardians of the Galaxy is the easiest one yet. It's like a standalone movie in space, and you don't have to worry about any of that shit.
Yeah, I was explaining to someone, like, this is basically the prequel to Avengers 2, because Guardians ain't got nothing to do with what's going on in the Avengers.
Very, very little. Yeah. That's how I saw Winter Soldier as well. It's like a really big precursor to Avengers 2. There's no other movie that leads more into Avengers 2 than Captain America: The Winter Soldier. I mean, Thor:
right.
Dark World, the most they had was that weird post-credit sequence with the Collector. And, you know, that'll tie into Guardians a little bit and then slightly into Avengers 2. But, yeah, Iron Man 3, I mean, I couldn't really find a parallel there. That had more to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. than the next Avengers film.
Right. And then that's the question. How does Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. continue? And you just kind of like, and it's kind of a resounding who cares. Although maybe it's like, maybe they change it, like they become S.W.O.R.D., you know? Or
apparently
one of
they
the...
are addressing it, like they... I guess the show, but I mean, no one's watching the show. It'll get renewed just because it's a brand opportunity for ABC and Disney. But
I've heard from some of my sources that it is absolutely getting renewed, regardless of its performance.
Yeah,
just because
it has
that fan base right now, and they're going to secure that foothold. But I don't know, post-season 2, if they don't really up their game, there's only so much you can take.
Well, then the other problem, Oh, and the other problem is like, at what point does it get in the way?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, if you're going to have these movies, but you also have these six important characters, like, something I've been wondering in the back of my mind is, like, when they get to Avengers 2 and they're like, oh shit, Coulson's alive? Well, that grieving was for nothing. Like, they don't... wouldn't that have some kind of bearing? Like, this character they thought was dead is now alive, and...
That was for no reason. Damn it.
Yeah. And that's a huge problem. Like, there are also little, like, problems that... It's sort of a short-term solution, and it could create bigger problems. Like, oh, do we have to worry about death in this world? Have we cured death? Or, you know, when Scarlett Johansson takes off her mask, like, as playing that, Jenny Agutter character. And it's like, oh, shit, we have mask, which is essentially shape-shifting. And it's like, oh, so now you can be anyone? Like, it's those little things where you almost have to explain it. Like, when Iron Man has those lasers, they actually have to say it's a one-off. Like, he can't use the lasers all the time, because it would be much easier in his life if he had just lasers in his hands, and just life would be easier for everyone.
Yeah, the technology was definitely ramped up in the Winter Soldier, of basically the impact of the Avengers and, you know, space and aliens and Tesseract technology.
Yeah, so we'll see about how the Winter Soldier bears out. I'm sorry you didn't like it as much, Adam, not because, like, go with the crowd, but obviously I just want you to see a movie that you like, so...
Yeah, I mean, and it wasn't like I had it out for it. I mean, I was like you guys, I had been hearing the crazy buzz and all that stuff, and so I was looking forward to it. I just, I don't know, it was fine. It's certainly no Iron Man 2 or Incredible Hulk, but it definitely sits at the middle of the pack of the Marvel movies for me.
It's now at the very top for me.
Yeah, for me it was at the top, and then I saw it, and then I watched First Avenger again, and then saw Winter Soldier again. It's just, I guess it's partially the setting of First Avenger that I find so charming. I think it's a great origin story. I think that has more humor in it. It's very, I just like such a good-hearted character. I think that's such, I think in today's superhero landscape, that's kind of a rarity. I think a lot of people expect, like, I don't know. To me, it's like Batman just seeps into everything.
Yeah.
It's like, be more like Batman. And that was such a huge problem with Man of Steel, which, by the way, gets worse on a second viewing. That film does not improve.
I just watched it again last night on HBO.
Oh, really? What'd you think?
It just happened to be on. I was watching. I liked Man of Steel. I mean, I enjoyed it. I know that a lot of people have problems with it, and I don't begrudge them those problems. You know, I think that it's a movie that kind of, it's definitely a divisive film.
Sure.
But I enjoy it. I didn't have a problem with it. But I do agree that the more that you watch it, I think that you're kind of looking at it like, oh, they they should have, they just would have done this, they would have done that. They, in my opinion, I felt like they did a lot right in terms of the last Superman film we got, Bryan Singer.
Oh, I see. I like Superman Returns a lot.
Well, see, I felt like I spent 2.5 hours to watch a guy throw a giant rock into space, and that's pretty much all that happened.
And so, yet, that film is Superman saving people instead of destroying shit.
Well, and you know, that's the thing. My thing with like the whole destruction argument, and I think with Man of Steel, as I was watching it last night, is it really does paint a portrait of like, holy shit, they just decimated this city, man. But the thing is, in comics, if you're looking at the medium that it's adapting, like, if you read, you know, if you're reading monthly books, pretty much they just destroy a city every month. And that's not just, and that's just in one book. And you're looking at, like, the 50 to 100 books that come out per month, or per week, rather. I mean, their cities are just being leveled just every week. So I think that if you hold on to it too much as a film goer, and you don't look at the perspective in terms of, well, this is what the medium it's coming from, I think they can distort that vision, and it can ruin the movie experience for you because you're drawing too many parallels. You're like, oh, this is like 9/11 porn or something like that. But it's really not. It's just consistent with what the books are in that sense.
Well, I guess that leads to the question, though. Are the books, is that an inherent good in the books that such distraction happens on a regular basis?
I think that it is, you know? And I've been reading comics since I was 12 years old, and then consistently, and I think the older that I get, I tend to read like the superhero books, and I still read them. But the older you get, you look at the books, and you're like, man, this is. It really does feel like you're thinking about it in the perspective of a human level, and you're like, people would not want to live in this world, because they try to present it in, hey, this is like regular world, but we have superheroes, and I'm like, I would never want to live in that world for real, because it's just so. Injected with destruction everywhere and uncertainty and like, you know, Galactus coming to devour the planet and like the millions upon millions of lives that are lost on a weekly basis in comics is nothing compared to what they do in the movies. Like nothing.
See, well, that's funny you mentioned like the comics, because like I usually don't read superhero comics, but I just started getting into Matt Fraction's Hawkeye, and the reason I really like it is because it's not that. It's actually just a dude it's like, this is what he does when he's not being an Avenger, and it's like, oh, he's trying to protect the people in his apartment building. It's Hawkeye, like, and he's like maybe going on a spy mission, but it's very small scale.
Yeah.
That, and I really like about, and it's also really funny and well drawn and well written, but.
Yep.
It's like, and also it stands alone, so I don't have to worry about like all the branching, like, oh fuck, what's going on in these 18 other books? I just have to, it's just there.
See, that's what I want to see in the movies. I want to see like a Black Widow spy movie. I want to see something that's contained, that has, you know, smaller repercussions, and then save the big like end of world destruction for the Avengers. Because it's just every single superhero movie is the same old thing.
Well, let me ask you this, Adam. If Guardians, I think Guardians of the Galaxy, they may have to protect an entire galaxy. Would you be okay with those stakes?
See, I think in that case, it makes sense because it's Star Wars. It's a completely different fantasy. But with Captain America, you have all of these superhero movies that take place on Earth that deal with a humanoid or a human-based life form saving the Earth and saving, you know, the citizens. It's all about why the citizens of Earth are worthy of saving, or why it matters that humanity should be saved. But with Guardians of the Galaxy, like, it's all these weird creatures and shit. So I think that makes it inherently more interesting because it's something different. Personally, I'm really looking forward to Ant-Man because I think Edgar Wright is staging action better than anyone doing it right now. And second of all, it sounds like he's doing something really interesting and weird.
He's setting it up as apparently like more of a heist film.
Yeah, he's doing, and as far as the adaptation of the comic goes, he's doing something weird, which I know that Iron Man 3 pissed a lot of people off, but I loved it. I loved the fact that Shane Black just said, you know, like, this is canon, but fuck canon. I'm doing what is interesting. So I think it's, I like to see something that puts a little bit of a twist on stuff.
Well, looking ahead to future movies, just briefly, what did you guys think of the stingers at the end?
I thought they were cool. I think I liked the Avengers one. I wasn't like floored by it. I liked that they showed, you know, Baron Strucker. I think he'll be cool for like kind of your kickoff villain in Avengers 2. This is nice to see a little tease of Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, but I wasn't like, oh my god, that's so... You know, it wasn't like the Avengers trailer at the end of First Avenger, where you're just like, that just destroyed the whole movie I just watched, this 1 minute basically trailer. But it was interesting. I mean, it didn't show enough to like really amp me up too much, but yeah, it was cool.
And Adam?
It was kind of underwhelming. I mean, I guess we're past the point where you can use a stinger as, like, you know, showing Thor's hammer. Like, that's really exciting, like, inherently.
Yeah.
Like, everyone knows who that is, and that's going to be really cool. As someone who hasn't read the comic books, I didn't know what the hell was going on. Like, I knew that was Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, but I didn't know who this guy with the monocle was and you know, what was happening. And I feel like this whole idea of, like, the second stinger is a little weird. Like, in Thor the Dark World, the movie doesn't wrap up until that last post-credit scene with Thor coming back and like seeing Jane, because it just leaves that whole thread open at the end of the quote unquote movie. So it's weird that they're using these like final stingers to wrap up a storyline from the actual movie, I guess. Because that's new, right? They hadn't been doing two.
They hadn't been doing two.
Yeah,
Iron Man 3 was supposed to have two, and they shot one, and they're like, we can't do this, and they scrapped it.
Wait, didn't they do one for Iron Man 3?
Didn't they have one?
The one with he was talking to Mark Ruffalo.
No, exactly. It was supposed to have two, though, is what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
It was supposed to have, like, the real, you know, the real one and then the funny one.
Gotcha.
And well, I mean, yeah.
With Cap 2, you had, I mean, it wasn't a funny one, per se.
No, it wasn't a funny one. That one is more like, oh, we're setting up Cap 3. Like, that, mm-hmm. to me, is what we're doing. We're setting up Cap 3. Keep it in the back of your mind. I'm like, okay.
I think Cap 3 may be Adam's movie. Because, I mean, ultimately, what happened with this one is you have a lot of setup with Winter Soldier. You've set up this relationship with, you know, Steve and Bucky, you know, basically at odds, and now Winter Soldier's kind of on the run. And when you look at the full history of this story, of the Winter Soldier story, from his introduction to where he is right now currently in the comics, it is a really cool kick-ass journey. And it's like one of those ones where I'm so thrilled that they even made the Winter Soldier movie that now I'm thinking, dude, if Sebastian Stan signed a 9-picture deal, and I know that everybody's already speculating about this, and you know a lot of us nerds are going nerdcore over it, but if they take it to that next level, it would be seriously awesome. Because
well,
at one point, you will see Sebastian Stan in the Captain America uniform. But
yeah, that's what
if
I was.
Do it.
That's what I was going to say. It feels like Marvel is starting to now plan ahead, because they're, you know, they're
in 2028.
They're in deep. And, you know, they signed all these big actors to these contracts, but those actors don't necessarily want to stick around. Like, Chris Evans has, you know, he's sticking with his Marvel contract as acting, but he wants to direct, and there's no telling if he'll re-up. Downey doesn't seem like he's thrilled to do another standalone Iron Man. He's just signed for Avengers 2 and Avengers 3. So it feels like they're starting to lay the groundwork for, in the future, if one of these actors leaves, someone else can take up this mantle under the, you know, quote-unquote Iron Man or Captain America name, which I think is really cool. I think that's a really cool idea in treating, I mean, as we've seen, Marvel's whole idea was treating movies like comic books, and they've kind of taught the audiences to do that. And so I think that's the, you know, if the first step was creating standalone movies and then putting those characters together in a big movie and then doing other standalone movies, I feel like the next step is now intermingling these characters under the same title. So an Iron Man isn't necessarily Tony Stark. I feel like that's where Marvel's going.
I think that would be cool. But we've also had, you know, Kevin Feige has said that with the Iron Man role, he's like, well, we can certainly treat it kind of like James Bond, where you have a different actor come in to play the same role. And I'm hip with that too, if that's the way they want to go. And I'm sure that, I'm positive we're not the first three guys to think of what they're going to do. And I'm sure they've, you know, gone through and thought of every option. But I think you're onto something, Adam, in terms of, you know, what they're building to and branching out to is kind of integrating all these different characters and pushing them forward. Whereas, you know, Chris Evans, Robert Downey Jr., they're getting older. They have other stuff they want to do, and that is a hell of a commitment. 9 pictures. I mean, that's a long time, man. You know,
yeah, and especially at the rate at which, Marvel puts out these movies, it's not like you're just doing a trilogy like Christian Bale and Batman. You're in it for the long haul. They're doing a bunch of movies. You have to be in multiple, like not just Captain America movies. You got to be in the Avengers, and then, you know, Black Widow's just there as their, you know, we don't want to make a Black Widow movie, so we'll put you in everything. So
I think they'll get to it eventually. But yeah. Paul, something I wanted to ask you as a comics fan, I have two questions. First off, why were you surprised they went to Winter Soldier as their sequel? Because you mentioned like that you were surprised when that was announced.
Yeah.
And secondly, what do you think about the rumor that Captain America 3 would actually be the psychotic Cap? Like, what is that, and what are your thoughts on that? Like, the psychotic Cap of the 50s.
Sure. Well, for your first question, I was excited that they did it because it's so recent. The comic came out in, I believe, it was 06 when it first kicked off. And it was like a Captain America reboot comic. They tend to do that regularly. But anyways, I was surprised because it was so recent. And it was a great story. Everybody loved it. You know, Ed Brubaker did an awesome job bringing back a character that they said they would, that Marvel said they would never bring back. Bucky was like the mainstay. He was always going to stay dead. And then Ed Brubaker came along. He's like, yeah, no, he's coming back. And he brought him back. And it wasn't just a fluke. It wasn't like, oh, this is just gimmicky. It's like they brought him back. You're like, holy shit, man, Winter Soldier is awesome. Like, this guy is a great character. He's like my favorite new slash old character in the Marvel Universe in the last 10 years. So it was like kind of a pipe dream, and they teased it in Captain America the First Avenger, where you have Bucky saving Cap's ass by sniping out the one Hydra soldier or whatever. That was like a clever nod. And even Joe Johnston said, he's like, you know, if I ever come back, you know, I would love to do Winter Soldier. It's like, oh, dude, that would be so awesome. But you have, you know, 50 or more years of Cap stories to pull from. So, I mean, they literally could have gone in so many different directions. But the fact that they chose Winter Soldier, that was like, I mean, it was just amazing. I was like, man, that is so badass. I can't even believe that they're doing it. So for me, just as like, you know, again, as a fan, seeing Winter Soldier on the big screen and done so well was just amazing.
And then for Psychotic Cap, what is that, and what are your thoughts on that? I'm not saying like that's happening, but that's been, I'm sure you've heard that.
Well, yeah, they keep teasing it, so I don't know. It sounds like they're going to try and work that in. I don't know how they're going to do it, but basically there was a Cap. There's been a number of different guys that wore the Captain America outfit. There's a guy called U.S. Agent, John Walker, who became Captain America for a while, because Steve Rogers has stepped away from the uniform multiple times. And there was a guy that came on and he just basically went nuts. I can't remember if it was John Walker himself, who then later became U.S. Agent, which is basically, he looks just like Captain America, like the outfit and everything, only it's like black and red. But he basically just kind of goes nuts, and he's kind of like a, I almost want to say like a right-wing crazy guy, but he's like kind of loses it. So I'm curious if they're going to go that route, in which he basically kind of challenges Cap in terms of his ideals. So it's like the government institutes their own Captain America, who kind of shapes to their ideals rather than, you know, what we like about Cap, which is his sense of right and wrong, his moral compass. It's pointing in the right direction. Whereas this guy that's wearing the Cap uniform is going out there and doing everything against Cap's ideals. So it pulls Cap
won't that create a lovely firestorm in the media?
Well, the other thing that I'm curious about is if they're going to use, there's this other guy called Nuke, who is a kind of an embodiment of that same character. And he has, you may have seen him before. He was in Daredevil for a while in the comics. And he is this dude, he just wears green cargo pants and boots. And he has an American flag painted on his face. And he's a lunatic. And he just goes around shooting everybody up. And he's, like, spouting rhetoric, like, as he's doing it. And he's popping pills. He's a Frank Miller creation. I believe Frank Miller created him.
Oh, really? A Frank Miller creation, you say?
I'm curious if they'll actually use him when they say, like, the crazy 50s Cap. Because in the recent books, and Marvel has done this in the Ultimate comics, they've kind of, they intermingle the two universes. So I'm wondering if maybe they'll use Nuke. Which would be interesting and very cool, because he is a freaking crazy ass, kind of like a Bane type character, I guess you could say, but not quite as smart, a little more crazy than smart.
Well, then there's the other thing about, you know, Adam, you mentioned how Frank Grillo survives a building falling on him, and I think that was to keep Crossbone. I mean, because they never call him Crossbone.
Well, I wouldn't say he survives like without any scratches. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, but like, I mean, it like. But he's Crossbones in the comic, right? He's never called that in the movie, but
no,
do you think,
they
like...
Tease it.
I'm sorry, what are you saying?
They tease it.
They may not use it.
They just kind of dropped that one in there. I was expecting a whole Sharon Carter story. Like,
they don't even call her Carter.
Sharon, yeah.
Which may have just sidestepped something that was kind of weird.
Well, what's interesting is in the original storyline is Agent Carter and Cap are already dating and, you know... they're together, and that's that, and you know, she's working in conjunction with him throughout the storyline. So, but it, again, it's for the movies, so it's a lot more difficult to just drop that in. You know, you start watching the movie, you're like, oh my God, Cap's got a girlfriend. She's the agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. I guess you could buy it, but then you're wondering, well, how did they meet? What happened? How did all this, you know what I'm saying? So you got to kind of start slow with some of that. In terms of Crossbones, I will say I was a little disappointed that we didn't see him in costume. Because Crossbones is kind of like, in a way, Winter Soldier's kind of main rogue for a while. In the comics, Crossbones is kind of set up as the one that kills Captain America. If you guys remember when they killed Captain America and then they brought him back.
Killed, air quotes.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody stays dead. But it was Crossbones that, you know, originally shot him, but then it's revealed that it's somebody else, which I don't want to spoil if people are, you know, reading the comics and stuff. Like, oh my God, you just dropped everything. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot. It's a very intricate storyline, which is, again, written by Ed Brubaker as it continues through the books. But yeah, I was disappointed we didn't see, you know, Brock Rumlow full on Crossbones. But I know that Frank Grillo has kind of owned the character. And I would love to see him come back for Cap 3 as Crossbones, full on geared up, and have some throwdowns. That would be very cool.
Yeah, one thing you guys did remind me of, and I think we'll get to recommendations unless there's something else to say, which is I did like that this film, in terms of the small moments, the thing that broke my heart is that when he goes to see Peggy Carter and she has dementia, yeah. Like, I'm like, holy shit, they went there with that. I was like, oh my God, that's like a knife to the heart. Like, I mean, it's like, oh, it's a beautiful reconciliation. It's like, oh my God, she has dementia. Like, that's fucked up, but sort of moving in a weird way.
It is surprising that that scene worked as well as it did. I think it would. I thought it would be kind of one of those cringe scenes you just got to kind of get through, but it actually was, I thought it worked pretty well.
I think it's a testament to the makeup. That makeup was fantastic.
It was.
It was good.
Yeah. Old age makeup is hard.
Yeah.
It is. It really is difficult.
Armie Hammer from J. Edgar.
Oh, goodness.
He's like 25. And he's having to play like an 84-year-old.
Brilliant, Clint. Brilliant.
Yeah, two takes, we're done.
Two takes, we're done.
I don't have my makeup on all the way. It's fine.
Clint, did we do makeup tests? What? I don't know what those are. Why are you talking? Okay, so... moving on to recommendations, Paul, why don't you start us off?
Okay, well, in keeping with the Cap 2 theme of the conspiracy thrillers, my recommendation, which is a little more modern-day conspiracy theory, is Arlington Road, which is directed by Mark Pellington, stars Jeff Bridges and Tim Robbins. And it is an eerie conspiracy theory film, kind of tackles onto domestic terrorism. And by the time, it's one of those movies where you get to the end and it is a gut punch. It ends with some balls where you're like, they're not going to do that, and they do it. So it's definitely one of those movies you watch where you may think you have it pegged, like, oh, it's going to end this way and it's going to be a standard, you know, they don't believe the good guy and he's going to save the day. But
what's the plot of it for people who don't know? Can you give a brief log line?
Yeah, Jeff Bridges is a professor and his wife is deceased. She was an FBI agent. She was killed at a domestic terror place, which was like a militia. And so he studies that and he teaches it. And then he has these new neighbors that move in, which is Tim Robbins and Joan Cusack. And they seem like nice neighbors and they're good people, but he starts to suspect things because it's like in his nature. And, you know, he's like an expert on it. And like strange things start happening and he starts to suspect that they're terrorists, but nobody believes him. And so it's one of those things where he's like trying to investigate these people under their nose. And the more that he gets into their life, he finds that, you know, nobody will believe him in terms of like what they actually are. So it's tackles on the theme of how much do you know your neighbors kind of thing. You know, is everybody who they seem, you know, you see them all the time, but are they the good people or bad people doing things behind your back? You just never know. But it's really, really taut, suspenseful, got a really cool score by Tom and Andy. It's just very cool conspiracy flick. I really dig it.
Cool. All right. Arlington Road. Adam, what do you got for us?
In keeping with the political thriller theme, I'm going with Alan J. Pakula's 1976 classic, All the President's Men. It's written by William Goldman, who is a brilliant screenwriter, wrote Princess Bride and a bunch of other stuff. And also stars Robert Redford, who was in Captain America: The Winter Soldier. And this movie, they don't make movies like this anymore because it's just people talking. That's the entire movie, and it's incredibly suspenseful and thrilling, and there's not a, you know, a hint of a fight sequence or anything like that. And it tells the story of the of Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward, who uncovered the Watergate scandal for the Washington Post. Robert Redford plays Bob Woodward, and Dustin Hoffman plays Carl Bernstein. And it's almost kind of and I revisit this and broadcast I revisit Broadcast News a lot, but these films almost seem kind of quaint now in the wake of the current state of journalism, because they're so focused on facts and, you know, spending months researching and doing all this stuff. And it's a really fascinating movie to kind of see how the newspaper business worked back then and to see how this conspiracy was uncovered. And it's a lot of fun watching Redford and Hoffman work together, because Woodward and Bernstein were not friends. They didn't particularly like each other, but they were so hell-bent on, you know, figuring this thing out that they worked together. And it's not one of those things where, like, oh, we're best friends at the end. You know, they just do the work and they piss each other off a lot. But if you haven't seen it, you should see it. Hal Holbrook is also in it, Jason Robards, Gene Alexander. It's a brilliant, brilliant classic, and it's definitely worth your time, especially to see, you know, an example of a thriller that works just with talking. So All the President's Men.
Yes. Excellent. And mine is sort of a companion piece to that. It's 1975, so it came out a year before. 3 Days of the Condor, directed by Sidney Pollack, also starring Robert Redford, also a conspiracy thriller. In the film, and it's important to mention that, hey, both these films came out after Watergate. I wonder what they were inspired by. In the film, which is based off a book called 6 Days of the Condor, so they did the movie in half the time, Robert Redford plays a CIA analyst, but a very particular kind. He plays a reader, and what his job is just to read books all day and mine them for ideas. Oh, you know, this... a terrorist could use this, or we could use this against terrorism. That's really all his job is, and he submits reports. So one day while he's out getting lunch for his coworkers, Max von Sydow, playing a nefarious hitman, comes in with a crew and guns down all of his coworkers. Redford comes back, discovers, oh shit, calls his CIA, you know, contact, and then he sort of has to go on the run because he doesn't know who he can trust. And this is a film with no action scenes. It really doesn't have a three-act structure like we expect from most movies these days. It's not an amazing film. I don't want to, like, it's not All the President's Men level classic. Let's make that clear. But it's really interesting for its time period, where it comes from. It's not a statement movie, but it's very much inspired by what had just happened. There is thrills to it as he is being hunted and trying to find out the truth. There's also this kind of forced romantic element where he kind of has to take Faye Dunaway hostage as sort of a, you know, I can't go back to my apartment, I'm going to go to your apartment and use your phone, and you're basically my way to stay on the lam. And naturally, you know, the sexual tension builds. with, and so it's like, you just kind of got to take that and just accept that it exists. But on the whole, it's an interesting film. Like, again, All the President's Men, I'm just going to leapfrog off your recommendation, Adam, for this whole recommendation of mine, which is they don't make movies like this anymore. They don't make movies like 3 Days of the Condor anymore. They just don't. It wouldn't get made today. It would need more action and bigger stakes. And really, 3 Days of the Condor isn't so much about a particular stake as much as it is about implications. And so... in that way, it kind of shares the Winter Soldier's thing, which is, you know, implications of things that happen in the real world. But 3 Days of Condor, obviously very, very different. Still an interesting film. I would recommend checking it out. Paul, thank you again so much for joining us today. It was great having you on and sharing your Captain America knowledge and opinions with us. Really appreciate it.
It was awesome. It was good talking to you guys.
Yes. I forget, are you on Twitter or...
I am on Twitter.
Yes.
At Arctic Ninja. And then you can find me on the website every day, www.joblo.com.
Yes. And for those who, the spelling is joblo.com.
Yes, joblo.com.
Okay. And so if you want to keep up with this, and if you want to keep up with this podcast, you should follow Adam and me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. And Adam, what is your Twitter handle?
@AdamChitwood.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.